If a church leader makes a mistake, should we still support him or her? Hello. Welcome to Probe. I'm Alden Thompson, your host. My conversation partners today are Dave Thomas, Dean of the School of Theology at Walla Walla College, and Aline Bauer, Visiting Instructor in Theology. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Alden.
Now we're going to talk about supporting our leaders. That's our topic for today. And that's kind of a challenging topic because sometimes we don't like to be told what to do by our leaders. In fact, I came across this amazing verse from 1 Thessalonians 5. I'd like to read it here to start, and then we'll talk about it. It's buried in the middle of 1 Thessalonians 5. This is what Paul tells the people at Thessalonica.
And what version of the Bible is this, Alden?
This is contemporary English version, okay. So it'll be a bit fresh because the contemporary English version is the first Bible translation specifically designed to be heard by the ear instead of just read. So listen up, and then we'll talk about it. My friends, we ask you to be thoughtful of your leaders who work hard and tell you how to live for the Lord. Show them great respect and love because of their work. Try to get along with each other. It's that last line that just really kind of cracks me up. You know, he said,
maybe hard, but do try.
So it kind of indicates that there's somehow an inherent tension between those who lead and those who follow.
That's very true.
Yeah.
And we certainly, when it comes to supporting leaders and dealing with leaders, we have to face those issues.
Yeah.
Now, the question of whether or not we can support someone who makes a mistake and what we do with someone who makes a mistake is one that I think we need to talk about. And I'd like to come back to a verse that we have referred to several times in the last few weeks, and that is Matthew 20:20-28, where James and John come and ask for top positions, and Jesus really brings them down to size and says that happens among the Gentiles, but it doesn't happen among us. Now, if you have a leader, and it's quite clear that the New Testament, while it has equality, there's still gifts of leadership, but if you have a leader that makes a mistake, what is the responsibility of a person or the group to call that leader to account? And will that be easier for some people than for others? Safer for some people than others? Let's talk about that dynamic when a leader has made a mistake.
Well, yeah, I think that nobody is above being challenged, at least not in the Christian community, I don't think.
Right.
See? I think the question becomes as to how you go about doing this in a proper way. I don't think anybody's entitled to any absolute loyalties or support.
Now, there may be different kinds of mistakes. There may be the one where he's doing something and deliberately, and he knows it's wrong, keeps on doing it. There's one where he's actually put his feet in and resisting. He may have been confronted already. But then there's the one that's the innocent. You know, he doesn't realize that he's making a mistake. Sweet. Like when I was academic dean, one of our faculty members said, you came to my office and you said everything you said was wrong, but I knew your heart was in the right place.
So he forgave you, huh?
Yeah. And I said to myself, now I should be able to do better than that. I don't see why I said all the wrong things.
But I think perhaps it does make a difference depending on if a person is belligerently doing something or just needs correction unaware that they are in error.
And those are three distinct categories. Here's the one who is doing something wrong but is deadpanning it, feels that he can do it in secret. Here's one who's already been confronted and plants his feet, says, don't you dare. And the other one who doesn't
know. Aware of it.
So, which of the easiest? Dave, you've been a pastor for a long time.
Probably the one that doesn't know it. I don't know. Mm-hmm. You know, you see, I was thinking a slightly different thought, Alden, is that, again, to me, the level of arrogance or the presence or the absence of arrogance is a huge issue here.
Hmm.
You know, that... And it's true in any leaders, not just in the church, that if somebody does wrong and is repentant, to borrow a good word, or that they exhibit no arrogance but sorrow and humility, those people are oftentimes safe to allow to continue on in their function. I mean, who amongst us has never made a mistake?
Mm-hmm.
You know? But if this person is being devious or dishonest, then I think it is not safe to leave them, and they have to be confronted and probably removed, and that's where things really get to be tough and tense.
Yeah. But in any way you look at it, it's incredibly difficult. Again, I remember when I was in a position, I was academic dean here, and one of my friends came down to see me, and it had been a very difficult time, and he just simply said, you know, Alden, things just aren't working. Now, I knew that, but I could tell it just tore him up, mm-hmm. Down there and sit in my office and tell me that, you know. Yeah. But I greatly admired him and greatly appreciated that kind of friendship. Somebody could do that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we need people who are willing to do that.
Well, was it last week or the week before, we talked a bit about servant leadership. Mm-hmm. And I think to the degree that a leader has the mentality of servant leadership mm-hmm. will determine how they will respond when confronted with an issue.
And ideally, the leader makes it easier for people to come to him or to her.
Yes.
Because if you pound the table with your convictions, then it's going to take a whole lot more energy for somebody to say, well, you pounded the table at the wrong time.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think when dealing with leaders, we have to recognize and we have to let them know that we recognize that there is a legitimate and biblical function for leaders, that this is a category of individuals whom God has established for a particular purpose. Now, I think in some cases it's easier for people who are in positions of power to get beyond their limits in terms of authority and function.
Mm-hmm.
That and so, you know, when somebody does wrong, I think they have to be confronted. But in most cases, there are mechanisms of doing that confrontation. Some of them are very long and hard.
And especially in Western cultures where we encourage the democratic idealists to make sure that you do that. And there are some, the more authoritarian the culture, the more difficult that becomes, and you pay a terrible price for that.
Yeah.
I remember I visited Guam a number of years ago, and when I got there, they were still talking about what had happened. A Korean Air 747 mm-hmm. had come in 300 feet too low, and it just plowed into a mountain, and everyone on board was destroyed. And the talking point was why they had three cockpit people and none of them spoke up what was happening. And they said, well, the Korean culture is very deferential.
Uh-huh.
You don't challenge the captain. See, whereas mm-hmm. in the American culture, the Western cultures, your cockpit crew is trained to challenge.
Yeah.
And it's that, given our weaknesses of humanity, it is terribly important that we help one another.
Yeah.
And I think the same.
And you could take that, take that and apply it to the church for our benefit. It's for our benefit.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And I think to establish checks and balances is awfully important. That nobody should be put in a position where they don't have to give account to somebody.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's too dangerous to human nature.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I think that the autocrats in history have often been the worst. Of people.
Mm-hmm. And I very much appreciate it when students in my classes, and I try to encourage this, when they actually come to me and said, did you know that you said something that was very troubling too?
Mm-hmm.
And I may not have picked that up. Now, in many cases, I'm pretty good at reading a crowd,
mm-hmm.
but there are some things that I can't, because some people are very good at bottling up inside, and you just don't know that.
So. Mm-hmm. And so it's a benefit to you when someone comes to you. I think it was Chuck Colson that said, you know, power often or always corrupts. And I think that is a danger for leaders. And that is a reason, too, why we need to have, again, the idea of servant leadership. Because then you realize you are there as a servant.
Mm-hmm.
And that changes your ability to hear what people might have to say to you. But Satan, I mean, the devil comes in with anything. And I think really has a tendency to... corrupt this.
And see, I think when I talk about the need for humility on the side of leaders, there needs to be humility on the side of followers too.
Mm-hmm.
That I have known of people who have derived a certain perverse delight out of just ripping leaders up just for the sake of doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's just as inappropriate as people who are in leadership positions who bear down on followers.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, there's always enough fault to go around. That we have to realize that all of us are frail and imperfect, and therefore arrogance is unbecoming.
Mm-hmm. And in that connection, I come back to the question of who will do the confrontation, who will do the informing. And I think the two extremes you don't want. There's this very shy person to force that person to confront.
Yeah.
And we have sometimes done that in the names of Matthew 18, said you need to go to it. But here, this gentle person would actually be destroyed if they had to confront.
Mm-hmm.
And then over here is the one who enjoys far too much.
Right.
So,
bring it on.
You know, and really, the kinds of people that I was listening to is one where you sense that it was difficult for them, but they were willing to do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Not the ones who came in and really enjoyed
delighted
it.
It.
Yeah. And see, I think in situations like that, that there has to be not even a shred of self-interest.
Yeah.
I had a long talk with somebody once about going to talk to someone and explained that this is a very challenging visit to make, and it will not be successful unless the person who is being confronted senses that there's an issue under discussion here, not an attempt to catch them in a mistake or to somehow make them look bad, because then they go into a defensive mode and the game is over. See?
Well, and does it help if we go back to our further study to remember we're all a part of the same body?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so we bring it about for the health of the body. And
yeah.
I used to think, I know in the early years of my marriage, that I would tend to be more confrontational, and I wanted to encourage my wife to be more confrontational. You know? I finally gave that up. You know, why should I make her into my image? And her non-confrontational nature is actually a helpful balance for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so I think that, again, that is part of the body of Christ, that there's some people do some things better.
Right.
And if we do what we do best with the encouragement of the group, then it can, in fact, be very helpful.
See, I think another check and balance that's a good one is for people not to be in positions of authority indefinitely.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
And Methodist church polity I really like in that respect.
Oh, is that right?
After 7 years, you return to the pastorate.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
So you don't be a bishop for, you know, you return.
Yeah.
And so that gives the idea that the real action is at the grassroots level. Mm-hmm. It's so easy in America where you go up the ladder. Bigger, mm-hmm. better, that it gives the impression, well, I'm just a pastor.
So. Uh-huh. That's good.
And so I think that's an important aspect as well. One last thing that I think we need to tuck in here and to recognize that we've talked here about a shared community, which I think is certainly Jesus' model, but people coming from an authoritarian background can't make that switch just automatically. And that becomes particularly challenging in a world church.
Mm-hmm.
Where you have people operating with quite different assumptions. The great equality passage that we've looked at before, where you have the slave, free, Jew, Gentile, male and female. Boy, it's taken a long time. Jew, Gentile was the only one that the New Testament addressed. But didn't you see some of that, Dave, when you went back to Africa and saw the dynamics there of the difference in attitudes towards authority and things when you took our students over there just recently?
Well, yeah. I mean, people are much more conditioned, if I can use that word, to not to challenge leaders.
Mm-hmm.
But I think in some cases, in many cases, that's very bad for leaders because they assume authority and begin to bend it to their own interests.
And they don't have a way of perceiving the world because one person has a very limited perspective.
Yeah, yeah, mm-hmm. yeah.
And I think that's probably one of the great weaknesses.
So perhaps we understand a little bit better this text about trying to get along with each other.
Yes.
You know, that these two groups both have valuable functions and important functions, but they are different and they have to be respectful of each other.
Yeah, that's true. Well, thank you very much, Dave and Eileen. We will have our last session in this go-around next time around, and our topic will be embracing the world. So we're going to look at a worldwide perspective. And Dave and Eileen will be with us again. My thanks to Jeremy Irwin, our program engineer, and to all of you for listening in. For Probe, I'm Alden Thompson.
You've been listening to Probe, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla College and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you may call 509-527-2194 or email probe@wwc.edu. Join us again next week at the same time for Probe.